Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Benoit Turner.
It's very cold in here.
And Josh Brown.
I'm freezing. My lips are not going to open.
It is ludicrously cold as we record in the actual studio. It's the day of our Christmas do. We've got a couple hours before we go and eat lots of stuff and drink lots of stuff and go to bed at 7 o'clock. But before then, we thought we'd take the time out to do some very specific 2021 video game recommendations. And we do have a full-on Best of 2021 list coming up as well, where we'll attempt to twat the living S out of each other over what the actual game of the year is. But before then, we've got some specific stuff to recommend that are just little bits and bobs that maybe didn't get the coverage they deserved, or are just things that we think other people should play. Starting with The Forgotten City, something that I think Josh was the first person to get through. Then, Benoit, you thundered through it.
Yeah.
And then on Sunday, I needed a break from 50 hours of Halo, so I played all 8 hours of it in one go. I did all four endings in one sitting. And Forgotten City's just absolute insanity, isn't it? We're not going to do spoilers.
No.
But oh my God.
Speaking of spoilers, though, I actually have a story to share in this podcast because I was doing something when you were playing that and you messaged me with a picture of you getting ending number one.
Yes.
And I was like, this is amazing. Scott is playing it. But I thought you had an ending that you did not get at that point. So I was talking to you as if you had known more than you had. And I was so worried that I'd spoiled the entire thing for you. But fortunately, it did not. Because that's how good this game is, that everyone can get different endings and have a completely different experience through it, to the point where you're so paranoid to talk about it that you don't know what they've done, you don't know what they've seen.
Need to very quickly outline that The Forgotten City is originally started as a Skyrim mod. It was a very small team of developers who then spent the last sort of 3 to 4 years taking this mod and fleshing it all out. They coded the whole thing themselves. Ludicrous story of the amount of crunch they put themselves under to be able to put the thing together. But story-wise, you play as a custom protagonist who falls into a city that's underground amongst a whole cave system, and they live by what is called the Golden Rule, which means that if any one of those people in that small city commits a sin, every single person will be turned to a golden statue. The only way to get around that is that when a sin is committed, the emperor of the place, is called Sentius, will run over to a certain spot in the land and trigger a portal, which resets time, which means that he dies again. But you jump through the portal if you can get there in time without being killed by the various statues that come to life while they're turning people into gold. And then you can reset time, try and figure out what's going on, try and figure out who's about to cause the sin. It's kind of like a murder mystery. It's kind of like a general mystery thing. But that game goes places, and I didn't see a lot of them coming. And obviously, we can't talk about it because it's spoilers, but the third and fourth, the fourth ending in particular, is the best and worst moment of the year simultaneously.
the many suffer for the sins of the one a lot of time.
And yes.
The endings are great, but also like the certain little moments that you can have in this game. A certain character that you come in there with a gun, or what, like I think
you can choose to start with a gun if you want. So then you have a finite amount of bullets that can then
what else
trigger.
Because I always had the gun.
I did the gun guy too.
I didn't have a gun.
You can be an amnesiac where you don't remember anything at all.
That's why it was because a soldier. But the gun is, I believe, the only thing that can take out the statue lads when everyone starts to suffer. So you can glock one of them as you go. But the best thing about the gun, right, there's this assassin that comes in a part of the game.
Yep.
Imagine this, it's one area, but imagine it's split into quadrants. So this have a smaller quadrant near of some pools after something may or may not collapse and you can use it to your advantage.
Yes.
But I didn't know that that was an option to fall the assassin into a certain place. So I was just told him to go that way.
Right.
Wait for him to turn around and go behind him and blap! And then just glopped him in the back of the head, took his bow because I know I needed his bow, and then the many shall suffer. And I'm like, ah! And I'm running away as everything's like collapsing, and I managed to get out of the bow. I was like, oh, I've got the bow. Now I felt like I broke the game in that way, which I haven't seen anyone else do.
I did the exact same thing because I also, if you take money from him, because there's a merchant seller who's realized that because no one can kill, because no one can steal, no one can do any of these sinful things, he can overcharge money for certain medicine that he's then taking advantage of people that need it, and you can try and get the medicine off him, but he asks you for, it's either 10,000 of the coin or it's 1,000. It's a lot compared to what you have access to, because obviously money is very finite in that space in itself, but taking advantage of the loops, you can just loot bodies, loot things, trigger the whole sinful, the apocalypse thing, reset time, and then have a whole bunch of money, and then you can go to the guy and be like, I just have 10,000 coins right here. I'll buy this thing. Or, like you said, get the bow, and then use that bow to take different people out, maybe stop an assassin from killing someone, etc.
And this game also does what 12 Minutes failed at, where 12 yes. Minutes makes you agonizingly go to the fridge and stuff all the time and look at your phone and blah,
do
blah,
10
blah.
Things to do one
but
different
with
thing.
This, they've got a nice little helpful lad that go, by the way, do this, this, and this. And yeah, I'll do that. And then he does half the game for you that you've already done when you're trying to progress. And with these time loops, like obviously it's a time loop game, so you go through and through and through. Mm-hmm. And you've got this one helpful person who will just go and do half of the stuff you don't need to do. And I just loved that that was in there because I was starting to... I was having like flashbacks to 12 minutes and I was thinking of Willem Dafoe and I was like, please don't be in this game, Willem Dafoe. I just can't deal with that game again.
Yeah, the thing with like time loop game, because this is by far year of the time loop. It's kind of crazy the amount of different projects that have all landed this year that are all time loop based, from Deathloop to 12 Minutes to now Forgotten City. But for me, time loop games for me are my checkpoint anxiety incarnate. I'm only losing out on stuff. I'm replaying things over and over again. I hate it. But Forgotten City actually does it well. It's one, like Ben Roy said, you talk to this guy called Galerius, and after a while, you know who to tell to stand where to avoid being killed, who to stand where to maybe affect a certain political election that's going to go down a certain way, and that changes different things. And once you realize you can talk to him, you get that empowering side of time loop stuff, which for me is like fundamental. Otherwise, you are just spending time getting back to the point that you wanted to change to do something different. And I feel like because they figure out such a great way of expediting the beginning bit, you get back to the thing you want to change really quickly. And it also means you can go up to characters and be like, I already know everything you're about to tell me. I know all your darkest secrets. You're about to go and do this, but actually don't do that. Go over there instead. I need this to happen instead. And I feel like they nailed that. I feel like this is what 12 Minutes and Deathloop wished they were.
Yeah,
like nails that sense of empowerment over time in a way that, to me at least, Deathloop and 12 Minutes absolutely did not.
Yeah, I think out of them all, it's definitely the best structured in how it, you know, banks your time, like you said, and how it honors your progression through the game. There's very little repetition, considering how you know, repetitious the subgenre inherently is.
And quite a small space as well that you're moving around in.
And I think that's kind of like summed up by the fact that when I got the first ending, when I figured out the main thread on who was going to break the rule, and I got all the way there. The person who you confront like understands what's going on, not much of a spoiler, but then they kind of comment in the game, comments on how many loops you've done, and the amount of loops I had done was one.
At that point
I had done one loop and gotten to this point, and I was like, it's cool that you can go through and abuse that system over and over again to, like you said, get the money, you know, incrementally change things, but also you can go in there, just have a play around, be very careful with what you do, and then find an ending like that. I love how different each player's playthrough is.
I'm going to talk about one, the gimmick ending, the secret ending, the stupid ending. Obviously, it's spoilers to some degree, but it's definitely not story-based. It is just something you can do that breaks the game, and then they reward you for it, which is the character that I mentioned before, Sentius, the person who was creating the portal so you can reset time. You can just kill him instead when he's on the way to reset the portal, which gives you a gimmick ending where you're thrust back into the modern day. Did we even mention it was ancient Rome? Probably not. but you get thrust back to the modern day because if that dude never existed, he could never create the portal, which brings you back to the past in the first place, and you get a whole different ending that way. But that was the first ending I got in about 5 minutes, because I was like, I'm just going to shoot the guy that is trying to make the portal and just see what happens.
Because it's hard to get him with a bow because it keeps pulling you away, but you can just glock him in the back of the head.
Yes.
Like, that's the gun is the greatest thing, where you can just, you don't come out with your bullets, so you've got a finite amount of them, but just trying to say, what happens if I shoot this person?
Yes. Yeah.
And the great thing about all these reveals is this game is 90% imagine everyone talking in Fallout 3 where you're just looking, but these artists aren't dead, and that's 90% of the game, either talking to people like that or going around like rummaging around in bins. And I wish I did the brown where I got a good first sleep, but I was like in a back room. I was like, no one's here. What if I just take this like 50 quid in the thing? And then it's the many shots
because you stole.
And then they could see me everywhere. I was like, what?
Ben, right. This is why I only had one loop. This is why they were like, you've only done it one time, because the first thing I did when you see Sentius and he's like, yeah, you're in a time loop, don't commit any crimes. I walked into a room and it was like, do you want to loot this chest? Do you want to take 50 gold? And I was like, yoink. Yeah. So I took it. And then it was like, you have, whatever it is, the many will suffer for the sins of the few, whatever it is.
That whole thing, though, I think is a really good way to incentivize you down the right path. Yeah. It makes you think, because the whole other wing to this game is this massive philosophical dissection of morality. And I think they could do more with it, but you do get to have really cool conversations with Sentius when you first get there about the difference of the Roman Empire, the way the morals were back then, and the way that obviously the modern day is, and different things and different ways the crimes work. And for example, Sentius's opinion on slavery and the way that he justifies it, and like in his idea and stuff like that. And eventually you run into different characters that literally ask you, can we have a philosophical conversation? And can we just sit down with this, you know, and talk for like 10 minutes about morality and good and right and wrong and everything else?
There's also a great like half and half relationship subplot, which you like sort of convincing thing like, someone's saying something is a sin, but you're like, well, if it's a sin, why hasn't it already got everyone killed? And he's like, well, actually, and then you find out more about this character who's being a bit of, I'll say a bigot at some point. Mm-hmm. And I just love like little moments like that, like, trying to break their mind, but well, it's not really a sin though, because why are we all still alive?
Yes.
And like all these conversations that just fall down, and like even from like that little weasel guy who's trying to keep the medicine from you and stuff. It's like, well, you can try and steal it, but we're all dead then.
They really know, like the way that it's written from your point of view, there's no voice acting for your character, but you pick loads of different dialogue options, but you can voice exactly what you need to. Like you can say like, well, this doesn't make sense because why didn't this happen before? Like if this is a sin, then this would have triggered before. How are you guys all still alive? And you can break those things down. But yeah, the way that game goes is for me one of the biggest reasons to recommend it, even though I think the ultimate secret end, or the final ending, what they call the canon ending, is, like I said, one of the worst things I've ever seen.
This is the thing. This is the issue with recommending The Forgotten City, which we've talked about.
Still wholeheartedly recommend
it. Yeah, on a few podcasts at this point, because it goes to places that you just don't want to spoil, and the setup of obviously trying to figure out who's going to break the golden rule and that entire kind of murder mystery thing is like just one layer of this game that just goes deep and deep and deep. And the story that you think it is at the start isn't the story that is at the end, but you don't want to spoil what that is. So all I have to say is, anyone is listening to this and really wants an engaging kind of adventure, narrative driven game, like, don't ever trust us, but trust us on this one.
No, entirely, you know what I mean? Trust us
on this one, and please take a leap and try it for yourself and let us know what you think of these mad revelations.
Also, it's tight AF. Like, you can get one of the endings in like 5-10 minutes. You know, I mean, I did all four of them in about 8 hours-ish. It's a very short game overall. You could come back to it, but you can have a good run. It feels satisfying to get these different endings and figure things out. It just feels fun to explore the world. Next thing down, which is obviously got a bit more conversation around it, but we're going to touch on it, is It Takes Two. Something that at the minute is undergoing a whole legal thing where it's going to be changing its name very soon because Epic are suing them for copyright infringement, apparently. But the game itself,
that's crazy. Sorry, not to interrupt, but that is just mad.
It changes everything about the way that it's listed on all the Game Awards stuff. Oh, it's like God. Epic's timing is horrendous.
It's like Monster. I can't remember who they were suing, but because Monster own the copyright to the word Monster, any product that comes out now that has anything Monster in it, they're like, no, mate, you can't.
Well, Bethesda
do that.
Tried to sue Mojang's game after Minecraft. They're Scrolls. They reckon that they own Scrolls. And like King tried to do it, the same thing as well, but I forget what that was for. But either way, it's a dumb thing. But It Takes Two continues to get talked about. It is one of the games of the year, up for the games of the year at the Game Awards. And all three of us have played it. Only Ben Roy, I believe, has finished it.
Yes.
And it's one of those things that I feel like most people are curious about. They don't know whether they should dive in. It is co-op mandated. You can't play it solo. So either that's someone in person, which is better, or an online partner. But Ben, what were your thoughts after having finally finished this elongated AF game?
Well, it's weird because like you'd say you'd almost think that this is a partner game. And then when I say a partner game, it's like, imagine we're humans that play games a lot. And then you might play, you mentioned it might be something you play with someone who's not game versed. Like, I'm trying to say it doesn't have to be an exact partner. I play this with a mate. Yeah. But like I was saying, like, because my friend played a Way Out with his, I don't know, is it fiance when you're half married or when you're almost, I can't, I
don't your know. Friend, mate. I don't know.
When you're, engaged. They're engaged, yeah. With his engagedee, you what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And they played a Way Out and like, they managed to get through that. And I think a Way Out is a very sort of like,
I love a Way Out.
It's just like almost a simple game. And I don't mean to that derogatory, like it just, you know, sometimes control, moving cameras and that will ruin people. And then we started playing Text 2. It's like, this could be one of them. And you get through it. It's like, man, this is some sort of hardcore every type
it
of game.
Two is brutal. Like the boss battles are ludicrous,
and like certain things from like murdering a Hoover with its own suckers to like fighting armies of wasps, and then going through into like,
it's like it becomes like a full third person shooter, or it becomes like a full timing based platforming game that you and person who's not played games need to nail.
And then like going through this like snow world, and you got tight platforming on like hard rails, and then you go there's underwater levels. You got to dodge giant fish like in The Phantom Menace and stuff like that. And other things when you're on bugs and you're jumping through rivers of, and then there's like lava. The
turret sequences.
Yeah, running away from armies of hedgehogs trying to destroy you after doing a stealth mission past hedgehogs where one of you is the grass and one of you's got to sneak on your friend to make sure you don't wake up all these hedgehogs. And it's mad. It goes so far and you think you're getting towards the end, and then that crazy book lad.
I love that book.
Pulls out, oh, by the way, there is a contract. I'm split into four pieces. Now you go to four different more worlds.
That is some Zelda Wind Waker BS. I think the thing with this is that Joseph Farrow has approved himself a couple times over Brothers and A Way Out. And I feel like it's interesting that EA published it, but I feel like they went, okay, what do you want to do? Like it feels like a blank check game, like, because it's really, really long, and every single idea that he had didn't feel like he left a single thing on the cutting room floor. It's very, very long, in a good way, like, well, in a semi-way. But the amount of things you can do in this game, the amount of individual core mechanics.
The evil monkey.
Ludicrous.
Did you come across that evil monkey?
Yes. Yeah.
Just think of that. And then you're on you ride on the back of a beetle, and I swear he sounds like Phil Mitchell or something. And just like, and there's so many weird voice choices for that. A lot of these characters.
So much character. There's so much character in it, though. Like,
it's so hilarious at points. Like, what is going on?
It's a lot of just Joseph Farris's approach to media. Like, he just seems to, he wants to have a laugh. He likes overblown characters. He likes memorable one-liners and things like that. And just, there's so much to it that I really, really love. I think he feels like the next wave of auteurs. Like, it's been a while since there's been a new auteur, like, in the industry. And I feel like I can champion him. And I feel like it's good to see him able to do this. I feel like we're bringing up It Takes Two, though, because it is an all-round recommendation, or at least it would be from me. But it is just so long. I feel like it's worth touching on because some people might get put off by the co-op thing. But that is by far the biggest strength to it.
I will say the story in the end is a bit predictable, but the way that they bring the characters together, I was waiting to roll my eyes as hard AF as I could. And I was like, you've actually done this pretty well, and I can't believe you did this.
You spent so much time with them at that point that like whatever's going to happen.
I swear this is like a 100-hour game. But
it does feel like it.
Now, after A Way Out, I was disappointed. And I think we were doing podcasts back when A Way Out came out. And I was I don't like this, man. I didn't like A Way Out, really. I thought it was a bit rubbish towards the end. Like, the ending was good, but it just got too, like, ugh. Mm. This game has sold me on anything Joseph Farris does for, like, the rest of time, unless he just makes the worst thing ever.
Mr. Josh Brown, quick thoughts on It Takes Two. I know that both of us got what we thought was a good chunk through it, and then there's a whole other half to go.
You're in the tutorial, mate.
I know, you might as well be.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, I've been threatening to go back to it all year, but for me, when it comes to, like, co-op games, I will play them with my partner, and I'm horrible when it comes to playing games with, because I want to do it as fast and as efficient as possible, and I have no time.
Just jump in air dash, man. Just air dash. Twice.
I've not
falling down.
Some of the platforming.
Which is exactly it, where you said, you know, I feel like if you are a person who loves co-op games and you have someone who's absolutely up for it, definitely get it. Because like you're saying, I really enjoyed A Way Out, but that is so rudimentary comparison to this. It's like crazy how much of a step up this is in terms of polish, in terms of game feel, in terms of the length and the variety and stuff. Not to say A Way Out was bad by any means, but this feels like AAA at times. Mm. You know, it feels like a incredibly well put together game that is as fun to play as it is fun to observe from a gimmick perspective.
That's a whole other thing to just round this thing off, is that the gameplay side of it, the feel of it is like as polished as Astrobot or as polished as a Ratchet and Clank. Like, it is ludicrous how pristine it is. Like I said, it's only Joseph Farris's third game.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
And like his That's team
crazy.
At Hazelight,
that is crazy.
You know, his team at Hazelight. Oh, I mean, obviously they're backed by EA; they have a lot of money to fall back on. But like, he's turning these things around, like as a creative director. And I just think that even the base gameplay side of it is leagues ahead of where anyone else would be in his position or that studio would be in.
I can't believe how much this game pulled me in towards the end, and I just want to say it cracked my top 10 just because I think it's that great.
I still want to go back and finish it before the end of the year, but I also. Don't know. That's the boss battles are brutal as hell. Josh, you've been playing another thing that I believe is a Strand game called Leak. Leak?
Leak?
You've been playing a Strand game called Lake.
Oh, we haven't got any leaks today, Scott Telford. It's not the news.
I know, not at this time of day, not after you've done two other recordings because the podcast ate itself.
Yes, Lake is a game that I played earlier this year when I was just wanting something really cozy, and I need to be upfront that it is a ropey game. You can tell that it was made by... not loads of people with not loads of resources. For instance, there isn't even an animation to open a door, which is weird for a game.
Phenomenal.
When you are a post person delivering post and you get in a truck that is full of post in and out of it over and over again. But yeah, essentially the premise of this game is that you play as this woman. It's set a few decades ago and you are returning to your childhood home for the first time in a long time. You had moved away to the city. You'd become a successful... like computer person, I suppose. This is like before computers were a big thing, and you're like doing a lot of coding for your bad boss who just wants you in work all of the time, and you're coming for this 2-week break to work in your father's post delivery service, I guess. So you're taking on his job, you're getting in the truck every day. In the game is just you driving around this idyllic town, delivering the post, forging relationships with the people you're delivering the post to, and kind of engaging in this small town. The small town stakes, I suppose. So the entire game is you having dialogue choices and making decisions about what you want to do in your night with your spare time. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, one strand has you flirting with the video rental clerk. You strike up a relationship with her. You can talk about movies. Or on the other hand, you can go and talk to a big, sexy lumberjack man who looks a bit like Luke Danes from Gilmore Girls, which I love.
Not a clue
lots.
What that is.
So, yeah, that's exactly how high the stakes go. It's deciding who you want to go on a date with and what you're going to do on those dates. But it's just so lovely, and it brings all this small town vibe to kind of gather with a lush art style and this great soundtrack of, I think, original songs that plays on the radio every single time you're obviously on your delivery route. Mm-hmm. So you hear these songs over and over again, and you just kind of you kind of feel like you live in this town after a while. And then it's just what you want to do as your character when you kind of become accustomed to that town. Do you want to go back to the city? Do you want to stay in this town? Is it as bad as you thought it was? If you're a person who has moved away from home and then returned to your hometown, like, I feel like it will resonate with you a lot.
That, it reminds me a little bit of, like, Night in the Woods. I remember when I saw like some of the trailers for it. Like I said, it reminded me of like Kojima saying that that Death Stranding would spawn a whole new genre of go point to point, figure things out over time. And obviously, there's no online component to Lake in the same way that Strand is, but it has that chill, just delivering stuff, that satisfaction of just ticking boxes in that reality. And we're not going to touch on the fact that you banked 80 more hours into Death Stranding, but Lake seems to be a nice accompaniment to the feel of Death Stranding overall. Something down there is something that I played that it came out of nowhere, and I was just like, well, I'm going to have to play that, is Big Rumble Boxing Creed Champions. Now, I'm the only person, I feel like, in the world who cares about this game other than the people who actually made it, but I'm just a huge Rocky fan. I love him as a character, and as soon as they started putting out any footage of what is literally, it's all officially licensed, it's all the Rocky stuff, it's all the Creed stuff, every single character that's in both those sets of movies, and they all get given stories as well. So if you want to play as Drago and see everything from his point of view, if you want to play as Drago's son, you totally can.
If they die, do they die?
They do not die. They get knocked out, they lie there, you hammer the buttons, you get back up. Three times you're allowed to get back up before you're TKO'd. But the thing with this game, and the reason that I largely ostensibly went for the platinum on it until I hit some do 500 punches in this direction thing, which is obviously the case in everything, is that there's actually a deceptive amount of depth to the system itself. It's lots of rock, paper, scissors, concentric circles, expanding type stuff, where it's, this move beats this move can duck under this move will let you charge this move while you are evading in a different direction, which will place you somewhere else in the ring, letting you get a haymaker, which will do more damage because you're coming at the person from a different angle. Building up different meters, letting you do the haymakers, letting you do Fight Night style slow motion punches, which people's jaws get all rubbery when you hit them, which I haven't seen in about 20 years, and I miss that level of knockout in most games. There hasn't been anything like this since, Facebreaker or the Fight Night series. Even the UFC games shy away from zooming all the way in, really letting you know that you just walloped a lad in the chops, and that's what I want way more of. So I've played an absolute hell of a lot of Big Rumble Boxing, and I think that it's a very, very tight fighting game. Completely pays off the licenses that it's using.
What happens when you punch the robot?
Well, so the thing is, even Stallone himself has abandoned the big old robot. It's not even in the director's cut. He was served by it in an old fast food restaurant when he was a youngin, and he went back to recut the new movie. And he apparently thinks it's stupid now. So
shocking.
I know. So he's got a whole thing, and the robot's not. He's not even mentioned. The robot's not even in there. And I've done.
Benroy, you don't understand. Have you seen Rocky? You don't know what the robot is from Rocky IV. Robot.
I think I've seen Rocky, and then Balboa, and then I've seen Creed.
What, mate? Go see Rocky. This is
then
not
they just
it.
Punch each other in the face over and over again.
Wait, there's a robot music. In the fourth one.
Go watch the original version of Rocky IV when Rocky buys Pauly a robot and it says, "Happy birthday, Pauly," and it's incredible. You don't need much else in your life, but what you do need is Chernobylite, a recommendation from Mr. Benroy.
Yeah, so we've all been talking about cozy games and how are we meant to be cozy? And my idea of being cozy is going out to a nuclear wasteland, which I have done IRL in real life, mean to Chernobyl, but mm-hmm. I wanted to do it again in the form of a video game. So Chernobylite is... it's an open segmented world, I think. Is that a way to say it? Like, there's five different sort of like large areas that you can go to over the course of like 25 days. And what you're trying to do is uncover, you're here to find someone and to uncover a few mysteries. I'm not saying character names or anything like that because you should just go into it. Mm-hmm. It's got so much charm. It feels cheap, but at the same time, it feels like I like that cheapness, and I've missed the sort of like simplification of some games, even though you pick up stuff by weight and it's got like numbers attached to it. You've got a home base, which you can build out, build like a farm almost, and you can build shelves and put things up there like that. And you build beds to have people to come over and hopefully stay. So you build a team towards this like Chernobyl heist, which I wasn't expecting.
A heist?
Yeah, you sort of like the end is like you need to break into the reactor, and like all these people you hire or get through have different skills. And like, say, one's really good at climbing and things, one's good at computers, and one's good at this and that. And like, so you need to then choose who you're going to take in with you at certain points. And if you do it wrong, you can go well wrong, and people get effed up, sort of thing. But there's already, to brief over, there's like, there are sort of ghoulish monsters like in Fallout, and then there are humans to deal with, but it's mainly each day get in and out, you're trying to deal with something, and as you interact with a character, and you can have different times of day, it's sort of determined by, I think it's random, like you can have like nuclear storms, which is quite interesting, like go in there, and what it is like you need to work out if you should be going into this area or someone else on your team. And it's, and I keep saying this, it's over the 25 days, and I'm gonna wrap it up by saying you should play Chernobyl. It's janky in parts. Towards the end, it does kind of eat itself in terms of saves.
Okay.
Where it's like, oh, don't close this game until you're certain you've got a save, because it will auto-save. And you go, by the way, I've deleted myself.
But just adding to the tension.
It was a fun mystery to sort of find out. And then when you do sort of other submissions during the night, when you're trying to uncover a web of lies, shall I say, that's also... as that sort of like jumps between time. There's so much here in this small package, so which I would love to see. I'm not, can't believe I say this, like the whole map of Chernobyl in one big map rather than the small segmented things, because we have so many open world games. It's like kind of like a death loop where you go into those zones each sort of day, sort of thing. Imagine it's sort of like that, that sort of enclosed and certain things are happening. But yeah, I like the sort of like games when I'm going to get covered in radiation, post-apocalyptic sort of.
It's your thing.
It's
just what
you like. It's my jam. It's my film. I love games from that part of the world. So I would recommend Chernobyl. And it was on sale for like less than 20 recently.
It seems cool. I've seen it pop up on a bunch of different lists.
Voice acting is terrible, though.
You have said the voice acting is terrible, but at least the gameplay systems are really solid. It sounds a little bit like parts of State of Decay are kind of in there a little bit. And a little bit of this War of Mine kind of tone-wise, but it seems like a very solid recommendation. Next thing down is Unpacking, a game that a lot of people tried on Game Pass. It's out on Xbox. I don't know if it's on other systems yet, but it's literally another chill game, but it's literally a game about unpacking boxes when you get to different parts of different rooms, different homesteads. And it's just a really lovely reflection, and you don't realize just how much of, if you think yourself about times you moved house or times you relocated to any degree, how much you banked that feeling, and how much, like, it's very hard to bring that out of someone, I find. Like, there's not that many different, stimuli in media that's going to be able to make you feel like that. Like, it's not necessarily homecoming, it's that transitionary period where it's like, my life is in these boxes and I'm going to put this out somewhere. And Unpacking is literally about that. It's different points in a person's life when they were unpacking different things, whether that's in the 90s and it's all full of 90s ephemera, like a Game Boy or a really chunky PC monitor or whatever, or moving across the 2000s as they went to different dorms, they went to university and stuff like that. So it's a very unique little game, and I think that it's more of a puzzle game than it lets on. I feel like it kind of opens to be more... like experiential, where it's like, here's a space, here are some boxes, inside are X number of things, put them wherever you want. But once you've finished where you think everything should go, it'll just flash and be like, actually, this needs to go there, this needs to go there. So there's more of a puzzle element to it than you think.
Which is quite funny, because I didn't really find out about this game until I read like a story online where people were putting their GameCubes in the kitchen, because now we're in a timeline where humans don't know what a GameCube is anymore.
Is that when they found out what the save icon was?
They thought it was like a rice cooker or something. I was like... what's going on here? But I do like that sort of aspect, like you can't put your knives and forks in your bedroom, like clean up and put them in
for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, like, you just clean up, okay? And like I bought this this game for a partner, and she's playing it. I was like, well, don't put the toilet rolls near the toilet, because you, like, some people might stand up there, and especially when you're in your dorms, they might miss, and then you're gonna pee on your toilet roll, and you come back to all this toilet roll peeing all over. But
fair.
It's interesting, like the whole thing, like how it gets deeper. Like, you figure out, like, as I've moved a lot of places, like what you take with you and what this character takes with them. And, like, the little piggy toy is one of the ones that sort of like goes a few places, but like others are sort of like thrown to the winds, yes. Like one or two moves. And, oh, and like I'm very sort of like, I'm not a hoarder, but I'm very particular of certain things. Like,
I'm very sentimental, yeah.
Yeah, I have a few things in storage which I won't let get thrown away until maybe one day I have a house, who knows. Mm-hmm. But it's nice. The storytelling in that aspect and like how you go from moving into your own spaces and how then you go and move in with like someone else and how you adapt to like be coming in someone's space and making this space your own and mm-hmm. where do you fit in this world, and it gets deep in that aspect, which I wasn't expecting from this sort of like cute little game. Mm-hmm. But I would highly recommend it on Game Pass. It's on Game Pass and PC and that, and it's not on PlayStation yet, but I mean it's on Switch.
It's very much this year's indie darling.
I would jump onto that because it's so simple, but so there's so much depth to it at the same time.
There's something about unpacking belongings and knowing that they have that personal connection, like knowing you're in someone else's stuff, that like the way that it builds that connection and you realize who you are actually playing as and what's happening over time, that it does give you that really unique connection. Like I said, it also stirs a whole bunch of different memories for the player themselves. Like you remember the time you lived through this. Like it's going to work for certain age groups to more than others, but it's a very unique little game and I think it's definitely worth picking up. Last thing we're going to talk about is Sable, a game that launched largely on fire, but it didn't stop me at all, because I just loved every little system that was in this. A game where you play as a character called Sable, growing up with a specific tribe out in like a sort of expansive desert place. It's very Breath of the Wild. But at certain points, when they get to people in this tribe get to a certain age, they then leave the tribe, they go out, they try and find different amounts of knowledge, they try and talk to different tribes, different groups of people, and eventually they'll ask them to make a mask, and at some point that character, Sable in this case, will come back to the tribe with the knowledge gained, and sort of like, and then that's how you finish the game. It's up to you how long you want to take exploring, how many different people you want to talk to, how many different masks you want to try and work towards. It's up to you when you think you've seen enough of the world, and it's on you when you think you've found something valuable enough to bring back to the tribe itself. And for me, it has a lot of like Eastern connotations. It's very religious and it's like set up. It's a lot of, they are directly talking about pilgrimages. Reminds me a lot of sort of like Muslim beliefs and, you know, going off to Mecca and stuff like that. And then, you know, coming back enriched as a person, and which I'm like, quite close to in terms of my wife's family's beliefs and stuff. So for me, that really hit in that way. And the way that Sable is dressed is very religious in itself, a headdress and things like that. So I love this game. This is absolutely one of my games of the year. I think it looks absolutely gorgeous. And the fact that there is no combat, it is just a game about exploration, gliding about on a little glider, unlocking parts for it, and just breathing it all in.
That's it, man. It's just about like being in that world, forging relationships, and figuring out who you want to be. You know, there's been a lot of really good coming of age stories this year, and this is definitely one of the best, I think, with the exception of maybe It Takes Two. It's one of the best written games of the year in terms of how much humor and personality and humanity it packs into its dialogue. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed talking to everyone that you find on this exploration, and you do find these pockets of humanity throughout these cities, throughout these little settlements that you visit while you're figuring out who you want to be, what kind of role you want to play as you grow up. And just, you know, like I said, getting to know those people is so lush and is so beautiful and surprisingly tender at parts, you know. I knew I was going to love it about 20 minutes in, where you finally leave the tutorial area and you go out and you're gliding, you go out on your pilgrimage and you're saying goodbye to people that you've known in real life for like 20 minutes,
that
like I
said. That little grandma character. Yes. I just want her to be all right. I've got to go give her a hug.
Well, this is it. You've known them for like 20 minutes. Sable's obviously known them for her entire life up until that point. But you feel like you've lived that life with her. You feel like you've lived every day with these people. And the fact that that emotionally affected me so much, I just knew I was in for a good ride. And that doesn't let up throughout. It just effortlessly strikes this emotional connection to you. And then you're away and it's just a lush time afterwards.
And also, I think just the final thing with that is that the gameplay side of it, it's very, here are some structures, go figure it out. It's that new age version of open world stuff where it's not a checklist of stuff to do. There is a mission log, let's say, where you can sort of remember which characters you've talked to, but it's way more like Breath of the Wild. It's way more like The Pathless. It's way more like Immortals Fenyx Rising in terms of just, here is a structure. What can you do there? Can you slide this? Can you move this? Can you shine a light at this gem? Will that do something? And you're just exploring and figuring out who Sable is, who she wants to be, and who you want her to be. And I think that it's just a really, really beautiful game, like aesthetically and internally as well. So those have been our personal 2021 recommendations. We have an upcoming Best Game of 2021 podcast to come up, where we'll sort of slap the living S out of each other over what actually is 2021's best game. But we'll get to that stuff in good time. For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Don't forget to play Mundawn.
And Josh Brown.
I'm still cold.
Play Monimals, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.